40s. Expecting partly sunny and dry conditions Thursday, mid-50s. Then back in the 40s for the following weekend. Adam Lepp reporting for The Talking Place.
Legend. Good afternoon. This is Pastor Craig, and welcome to Study His Word Radio. I missed the 11 o'clock hour, most of it. I had a previous engagement and took up a little bit more time than I had expected. And I thank Scott and Matt for carrying on for me in my absence. But I'm here now, and this is Study His Word Radio. I do not have a guest today. I thank you for listening. If you've been listening the past couple of weeks, and I've had guests on here, I do not have a guest today, but I do have a lot of things to talk about. One of the big things, one of the major things in the news right now is, of course, what is going on in Israel with Israel and Hamas. And I thought maybe we would take some time today and kind of dive into it because it is really a complex situation and it affects us in ways that we may not even really be aware of. It is affecting world politics, and so I was kind of wanted to talk about it a bit. And if we really want to have a serious conversation about the situation, we have to go back in history. The roots of the problem today go back literally 4,000 years. And so I wanted to kind of give a quick history of the Middle East because it will help frame what is happening today. And something else that we will see is that this is not about land. This is not about Palestine or Palestinians or the Arabs having a separate land from Israel. This is not about land. It's strictly about Israel and the existence of Israel. So, anyway, let's buckle our seat belts and let's go back in time a little bit. It is helpful to trace the history of both the Jews and the Arabs or the Palestinians, who are the smaller group of Arabs. Where this all began as far as Israel as a people and the Jews as a people is about 4,000 years ago, and we had an individual who was named Abraham. I'm sure probably most of you have heard of Abraham. Abraham was chosen by God to be the start of a special people. And all his offspring were going to be a special people. They were going to be the nation of Israel. They were going to be the Jewish people. And God promised Abraham certain things. One, he promised Abraham that he would make him a great nation and his lineage would become a great nation. And so that is the origins, that is the beginning of the Jewish people. They have their beginnings in Abraham, and they were chosen by God, and they were set aside by God, and they had certain things that they had to do for God, and God would do for them. But it is out of Abraham that the Jewish people came. God also promised certain land to Abraham and his descendants, and that is where we get the term the promised land. I know in today's age we often speak about the promised land, and as far as Christians, that is looking forward to heaven. Heaven is also often referred to as the promised land. But where does that come from? That comes back to God's original promise to the nation of Israel, the promised land or lands, was that land that was given to them. And it was very specific land that was given to them. There were boundaries of that land in the Middle East. And I'll get into more of that later. And then, so you have Abraham leaving his family, leaving his mother and his father, and leaving his, you know, family members, and traveling to that area that he was supposed to go. And we could get into more specifics about, you know, his cousin Lot, and, you know, how they chose the land and all that, but that's not really important. But what is important is that this land was promised to him, and then during an extreme famine, Abraham traveled to Egypt, and eventually what happened was Egypt was kind of in control of that land that was promised to them, but they traveled to an area under Egypt's control, and eventually the generations of offspring that were the Jewish people, or the Hebrews as they were known, became enslaved by Egypt. And it reached a point where God rose up Moses, and Moses was going to take his people, or God's people, or the Jewish people, or the Hebrew people, out of captivity in Egypt and take them to the promised land. Now, Moses himself was not going to travel into the promised land, and that's, I don't want to get off on too many tangents, but he was going to take them to the promised land, but not into the promised land. So you've probably heard the story of, you know, the parting of the Red Sea. Moses led them through there. They are in the wilderness, and they are coming up to the promised land, and of course Moses passes away. It now falls to Joshua to lead them into that promised land, or those lands that were promised to them. And so Joshua does, and when they cross over the Jordan River into the promised land, and the various tribes of Israel, there were 12 tribes, the various tribes of Israel are again told what land they are to take. And, you know, Joshua, being instructed by God, Joshua gives each tribe the land that they are supposed to take, that is the land that God had promised for them. So that's kind of the history of how the Jewish people came about and how they came about to be in that land that they have. Now, over the last 4,000 years, there have been, you know, civilizations that have come in and taken parts of Israel over and taken the Israeli people or the Jewish people into captivity. We've seen that go on. There have been men, I mean, you know, the Persians, the Babylonians, etc. You know, at the time of Christ, they were under Roman rule. So they've had a very, it's really interesting history to read. And I want to say at this point that obviously I'm coming to you from a Christian perspective, but this is history, and this is documented history. So even if you're not a believer in Christ, even if you're not a believer in God, if you are an atheist, this is the history of these people and how they came about and how they got where they were. So, I mean, it's not like this is all made up. I mean, it's actual history. So that's how they came about. Now, as far as the Palestinians, basically the Palestinians are a smaller section of Arab people. You know, the Middle East is got a lot of, well, the Middle East is made up of Arab people. That's the peninsula of Arabia. They're Arabs, and then there is a small group that call themselves Palestinians. They can trace their roots back to the Philistines. The Philistines were originally of Greek. They were originally in the area around Greece, and they over time migrated down to essentially what is now the Gaza Strip. So the Philistines are, when you read in biblical times about some of the battles going on between the Jewish people and the Philistines, primarily this took place in the area that is now known as the Gaza Strip. So the Philistines were pretty much, you know, concentrated in that area. Over the years, you know, the Philistines as people were pretty much wiped out by Persians and other groups, and they kind of disappeared. But they can trace their roots back to the area around Gaza. So, fast forward to today. So this is the history, and you know, there's literally thousands of years of people coming in and controlling this area, these areas, and others, you know, like I said, the Persians, the Romans. So they still kept their ethnic identities, but as far as control of the land, it has changed many times. There never has been a country or a sovereign government known as Palestine. Now, I know we'll talk about Palestine here in the 20th century when it essentially arose, but there never has been a country known as Palestine. But there has been a country known as Israel. Now, as far as people's claim to land, the only people that I am aware of who have a claim on a land would be the nation of Israel. They are the only people where God specifically promised them land. And that is that land that they are now occupying. And actually, what was promised to them is larger than what they now occupy as Israel. But that's neither here nor there. They are the only people that have been promised land and can make a legitimate claim for that land. Now, if you, again, if you're not agreeing with, you know, God and what he has done, look at it from a natural standpoint. Anywhere in the world where you go today, the people who are living there and claiming that land, if you go back and trace the history of it, in most cases, that land has changed hands many times. I mean, world history is full of conquering neighbors, land being taken over, land being taken sometimes by force and sometimes just by moving in and, you know, pushing the other people out. So, you know, that's kind of what's happened in the world as far as who owns this land. And I know that's kind of a, I'm going to get a little bit off topic here, but that's kind of a hot topic here in this country. You know, the big bad Europeans came over and took the land away from, well, let's see. First we called them Indians, and then we called them Native Americans, and now we call them indigenous people. And, you know, and that in itself is a problem, because actually nobody here is an indigenous persons. And now what we can do is we can change the definition of indigenous to make it fit the people that were here before the Europeans came over, but we have to change the definition. They are not indigenous people. And how can I say that they're not indigenous people? Well, I'll tell you how. They came over from, you know, these people that we call Indians or Native Americans or indigenous people, they came over from another place. And, you know, what's widely believed is that they came over from Asia, across a land bridge between Asia and America, Alaska, and came down. And actually, they came in three different waves. There were three different waves over a 1,000-year period of peoples coming over. And what's interesting is they are heavy in Asians that came over, but they also had certain roots in Europe. And in one wave, there was a strong contingent that had African roots. How do we know this? We know this by DNA research. There is a man, Dr. Nathaniel Jeanson, who has done extensive DNA research, but he's doing it, his area of research is family relationships, or what is the family relation that we can trace in DNA. And Dr. Jeanson, and in his DNA research that he's been doing for over 20 years, he has found out some very interesting things. One, there's a whole lot more mixing in this world than what we tend to think. But it makes sense. You know, over thousands of years, when you have different groups, you know, conquer other groups, there's going to be intermarrying. You have groups that have taken other groups captive. There's intermarrying. You've had groups that have taken other groups that, and they used that group for slavery, and there was intermarrying. And so, you know, from the beginning of time, this has happened. And so what we found out is it wasn't just Asian people that came over here. They had Asian roots, they had European roots, they had African roots. Now, what's interesting, and I'll get back to Israel and Hamas here in a minute, but what is interesting about his DNA research is that he can trace every human being's DNA back to an original father. Let me say that again. He can trace through DNA every human being's back to an original father. And in the matriarchal line of DNA, he can trace everyone back to a common mother. So you instantly think Adam and Eve. And if you don't want to believe the story of Adam and Eve, that's fine. You can argue against science. I mean, we are talking science here, and you have the freedom to do that. But the other thing that's really important about the DNA, and then I'll get back on track here with what I'm really talking about. But what's interesting about the DNA is it can not only can it be traced back to a common mother and father, but there's no mixing of DNA that you would expect to find if we had evolved from apes, or we had evolved from lower animals, or if we'd evolved from out of a slime pit. You know, it just isn't there. And, you know, it's also kind of interesting as a side note that the one thing that has totally put Darwin's theory, and it was always just that, a theory, but Darwin's theory of evolution that has put really the final, you know, nail in the coffin, is what has come out of DNA. We can actually prove with DNA that we didn't evolve from apes, and we didn't evolve from, you know, a green slime. As a matter of fact, what's really kind of interesting is many of the leading atheists who are, you know, obviously have a naturalist view of creation or where things came from, they don't even use Darwinian evolution anymore because they know. They admit and they know that it's been put to rest. But anyway, so I got off on that sidetrack, but I just had to say that. So now we've got to go back. So my point being that we all come from the cradle of civilization, which is around that area of the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. That's where man began. That's where we came from. And that is what indigenous people are, is the cradle of civilization was the Tigris and Euphrates River. That's where we're from. And then we have migrated out to the various portions of the world and to the point where we populate the whole world. But that is where we all have come from. So again, I go back to what are indigenous people? Well, we're indigenous to that area of the world. Everything else is we migrated to. And then that brings us to Israel. As far as the lands that people migrated to, they are the only people that have a promise that this land is your land. They have a specific piece of land that is promised to them. So, all right. Now, they've occupied that land since the beginning of when there was a Jewish people. And at different times, they've had different rulers. At different times, they've been ruled by other people. At different times, they've been scattered about the land, and they've been scattered all over the world. But they've maintained a certain remnant living in that area and keeping their Jewish line as pure as possible. But as I said, there was never a Palestine. Now, we come to the 20th century, and right after World War I, the British set up what was called a Palestine Mandate. And it was under British authority. And what it was to be a home for the Israeli people, or well, for the Jewish people and for the Palestinian people. And because that area of land had been called Palestine for a long time, but there never was a country or a governing body called Palestine, but that area was called Palestine. So the British set up a mandate, and it was to be for the Jewish people and the Palestinian people. And really what happened after, at the end of World War II, when we have the establishment of Israel as a country with the United Nations, they wanted there to be a two-state area that would be the homeland for the Jewish people and for the Palestinians. And therefore, Israel was given its independence and recognized by the United States as a sovereign country. We were the first people to recognize it. Since then, they've pretty much been recognized by most countries as a sovereign people. And then the land for the Palestinians was to be the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, more or less, and it was to be for the Palestinians, but it was going to be under Israeli control. Now, this is where we get into problems. There were several organizations that were not happy with this two-state solution, with Israel having control over the Palestinian state. And it was interesting because, you know, the Israel has always allowed the Palestinians to be there and to operate as they wish as far as their religion. They were allowed to practice the religion of Islam, and Israel provided them defense and provided them what they needed to live. But you had several groups of Palestinians that wanted to control themselves and did not want Israel to exist. Primarily, one of the early ones was an organization called Fatah, or Fatah, and it was founded in the 1950s by Yasser Arafat. He founded Fatah as a paramilitary organization whose goal was the removal of Israel. Now, where does this removal of Israel come from? Well, we got to go back to the formation of the Islamic religion that was founded by Muhammad, and his holy writings were the Quran. And in the Quran, he calls the Jewish people infidels, and the only way that Islam was to deal with the Jewish people was to take them over by force and force them to give up their religion and become a part of Islam. He also, in different parts of the Quran, you have control of Israel by force, and there is also talk about elimination of the infidels. And by the way, Christians are considered infidels also. So their only goal is to take us over by force or to kill us. We're treated the same as Jewish people as far as Islam is concerned. So you had Yasser Arafat, who started started Fatah with that goal of elimination of Israel. He was following the Quran. And in 1967, he joined the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And again, this was what their goal was. This is why when they were having the Camp David talks and those things, this is why Yasser Arafat walked away from an offer that Israel made to give them certain lands, because they did not want land. They wanted land and the elimination of Israel. See, this is the part that we need to understand if we're going to understand what's going on there today, is that they want land and they want the elimination of Israel. They do not want a two-state solution. They do not want to have a country of their own beside the nation of Israel. They want land, and they want the elimination of Israel. So anyway, so Yasser Arafat was kind of a big player in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then as his health decreased, his influence decreased, and the PLO's influence decreased, and they were pretty much replaced by Hamas. Now, if you want to understand Hamas, the best way to understand Hamas is to read their charter. They had a charter in 1988 where they chartered their group, and this. So what we do, we look there and we see what they wanted. In the preamble of their charter, it says, Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it. Article number 11 of the Hamas charter is the land of Palestine is a holy possession consecrated for future Muslim generations until Judgment Day. No one can renounce it or any part of it or abandon it or any part of it. Okay. Article 13. Palestine is an Islamic land. Since this is the case, the liberation of Palestine is an individual duty for every Muslim wherever he may be. So in other words, he needs to liberate Palestine. Who does he need to liberate it from? Yeah, you guessed it. Article 15. The day the enemies usurp part of Muslim land, jihad becomes the individual duty of every Muslim. In the face of the Jews' usurpation, it is compulsory that the banner of jihad be raised. So basically, it's every Muslim's duty to wage holy war, that's what jihad is, against the usurpation of their land, which is by the people of Israel. Article 13 states, peace initiatives and so-called peaceful solutions and international conferences are in contradiction to the principles of the Islamic resistance movement. There is no solution for the Palestine problem except by jihad. Initiatives, proposals, and international conferences are but a waste of time and exercise in futility. So, you can see that by their nature, their charter, Hamas only wants one thing. It wants elimination of the nation of Israel and of the Jewish people. They will not consider any type of peace unless it means elimination of Israel. So that's where Hamas stands. Now, you know, in that area of the Gaza Strip, most of the Palestinian people do not like Hamas because they understand that Hamas was founded as a terrorist organization that's only goal was the elimination of Israel. And Hamas is willing to starve the Palestinian people in order to feed themselves. Hamas is willing to use all the fuel and other things of the Palestinian people to supply themselves. And it is well documented that Hamas is willing to use the Palestinian people as human shields in order to do two things. One, you use human shields to protect yourself, and two, by using human shields, by sacrificing the Palestinian people, you will make Israel look bad in the world stage because, Israel is killing innocent women and children. So that's why Hamas is so embedded in the communities of the Palestinian people. Now, you can say what you want, but I really have to question how evil of a person can you be that you will let or you will use the very people that are your brothers and sisters be sacrificed in order to gain what you want. So it's a look into how evil they are. And that's why the events of 4 weeks ago, October 7th, and the horrible things that Hamas did, it's no surprise. We know how evil and horrible Hamas can be with their own people, let alone Israelis. So that is the background to the situation that we have. Now, further complicating the message or the issue, is the fact that we have here in this country a president who pledges unwavering support for the nation of Israel, who tells Netanyahu that we've got your back, who wants to send money over and arms over to Israel. And then at the same time, he's asking for Israel to peace talks, come to a peace agreement. And you've probably seen it on the news or heard it. Benjamin Netanyahu has said they will not negotiate with Hamas, and negotiating peace with Hamas is the same as surrendering, and that they want to annihilate or obliterate Hamas, and they will not stop until they do. It's understandable why. They are faced with an enemy who has the exact same goal themselves. They won't stop until they eliminate or obliterate Israel. So the only solution to this problem, and I know this is hard to take for a lot of people, really for anybody, but the only solution to the problem is the total elimination of one side. I mean, you pick the side. If you want to root for the Palestinians, then you're going to pick for the total obliteration and elimination of Israel. If you're going to pick Israel, then you're going to root for the total elimination and obliteration of Hamas. And I guess root for is a poor choice, but because nobody's rooting for that. But realistically, this is what has to happen. This is the only way that's going to get resolved. You know, we've had, obviously, problems since Israel was given sovereignty as a nation. But, you know, President Carter had the Camp David peace accords in which Egypt and Israel came to agreements. President Reagan worked on a proposed peace plan. Bill Clinton had the Oslo Accords where they got peace between Israel and Jordan. And that was the one where Arafat walked away from the table and because he didn't want to settle for what he was being given. We even had President Trump had the Abraham Accords, where the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, and Morocco came to agreements with Israel. So, you know, every president I mean, and I could talk about the Bushes, but every president for the last 50 years has worked on bringing peace to the Mideast. And every president has had some success. I mean, we had the Camp David Peace Accords. We had the Oslo Accords. We had the Abraham Accords. So, you know, everyone's had some success, but what has it primarily been? It's primarily been peace between Israel and other countries. For instance, Egypt and, you know, Jordan and Sudan and Morocco, but not with the actual people fighting for Palestine liberation. And we won't see any president. I know every president, you know, every president wants to bring peace to the Middle East. That's a noble effort. Why wouldn't you want peace in the Middle East? Who wouldn't want it? It's a noble cause, but it isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen until you eliminate the people who want to eliminate Israel, eliminate the Jewish people. And, you know, I know a lot of things have been said, but there is no difference between the Hamas and Adolf Hitler, who wanted to exterminate the Jewish people. Their goals were the same. It's just Hamas hasn't been able to do it on a large scale like Hitler, and he was not successful. So that is the grim reality. I mean, we would like to get peace. We would like to think that we could get peace, but we've got a group of people whose main objective is the elimination of another group of people, and then we've got a group of people whose main objective is survival. And the only way for survival is the elimination of people that want to eliminate them. So, you know, I was originally planning on talking about how this has had so much spillover effect. We've had groups on college campuses protesting, holding rallies for the support of Palestine. We've had college groups, having rallies and protesting for the support of Hamas. We've had politicians who have come out in support of Hamas, who've accused Israel of being colonizers, which is a joke. We've had politicians accusing Israel of being an apartheid state, which again is a joke. And I don't have time to go into that. But, you know, there's no comparison. But it just points up the amount of evil that's in this world. And, you know, right now, Hamas is front and center. And I don't know what's going to happen. I have my own feelings on what will probably happen. I feel that Hamas will, if they're not totally eliminated, they will be rendered ineffective, and they'll kind of go the route that the PLO has gone. But somebody else will probably step in to take over for Hamas. We didn't even talk about Hezbollah, which is very similar to Hamas and has similar goals. And that's kind of looming on the horizon. So that's going to really about wrap it up. I probably put most of you to sleep. I've probably disappointed some people as far as the topic that I covered today, but I really felt it was necessary that if we're going to talk about the situation in Israel, we need to really look at how did we get to this point. And it really does start 4,000 years ago? And quite honestly, the answer probably isn't going to come anytime soon, although it may come very soon. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I hope you have, if you managed to stay awake or didn't turn me off, if you stayed through the whole time, I hope you have a better understanding of maybe the history of that area and how we got to where we were, because that was really my most important point, is to bring that to you. So thank you for listening. I'm out of here, out of the new studio. I'll be back again next week with Scott and friends. Have a great weekend.